Okay, well, welcome everyone. Today I will be giving, starting up again, hopefully, starting up my regular weekly talk. And today's talk is on a very special subject. The auspicious night, or the auspicious attachment. There are two translations of this. I'm sending a link out here and I hope it works. But if you want to read along, I think this link should pull up a PDF file for you. Let's see here. Yeah. Okay, so if you want to follow along, it's not really necessary. I'm not going to go by the script. And the problem with English translations of the Buddha's teaching are that they sort of give away the repetitive nature of the Pali text in a way that's not at all flattering, because the Pali texts are meant to be recited, and the Pali words and idioms are very poetic as well. So even reading the Pali, the repetitions in the Pali, is not nearly as arduous as reading the corresponding English translations. But the outline is very clear. This isn't how anyone would teach in English if you were going to give this sort of talk. But it's a very cut and dry, methodical sort of teaching. The greatest part of the sutta is the verses, which are in fact poetic. I think even in the English that is kept. And I'm just going to read them in Pali to you. Not that anyone here probably will understand them, or a few of you at any rate, but just so you get an idea of how it sounds in the original Pali. So we're starting at the verses here where it says, "Let not a person revive the past." And I'll go over it with you if you're not reading the PDF. But first let's listen to it in Pali. Atitanan wa kameya napatikang ke anagatang. Let me start that again. I lost it here. Atitanan wa kameya napatikang ke anagatang. Yatatitang pahinantang apatancha anagatang. Panchupanancha yodhamang tatatata vipasati. Asanghirang asangkupang tang vidwa manubruhaye. Acheva kichamatapang ko chanya maranang suve. Nahino sankarang tena mahasene namachuna. Ewang viharing ataping ahoratta. Matantitang tangwe pate karatoti santo ajikate muniti, which translates loosely as, "Let not a person revive the past or on the future build his hopes, for the past has been left behind and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let him see each presently arisen state. Let him know that and be sure of it. Invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come, who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep him and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day and night, it is he, the peaceful sage has said, who has one fortunate attachment." I'm going to say right off that I'm ambivalent as to this translation of the word ratta. Ratta can also mean night. It's not really clear to me. But the commentaries say attachment, so we're going to go with that. I like the idea of thinking that this is, and this is the way they used to translate, there's like one fortunate day. I think that's a similar, I'm not sure about that. No, ratta. Aratti means night, but ratti can also mean attachment. But here, I just want to go with this theme of having one good day, because today is the day where all around the world people are making videos and posting them to YouTube to be used in a documentary. And so you've got, I don't know, maybe thousands of people uploading these videos, and it's going to be put together by these award-winning directors who are going to make a documentary about it. It's called Life in a Day. And so I thought, well, what a better theme from a Buddhist point of view, where this is what we're all about, is living life for the day, or living life for the moment. You know, this whole idea of carpe diem. Well, I would submit that Buddhism is the ultimate carpe diem. It's the ultimate seize the day. And I think this sutta is a very good example of that. And we are always quoting this sutta. Don't go back to the past. Don't follow after the past. Don't worry about the future. The actual translation here would be, don't doubt or be concerned with the future. Because what is in the past has already gone, what is in the future has not yet come. Living for the present moment and seeing it clearly. This is an incredibly succinct summary of the Buddha's teaching, that we should live for the moment here and now. And it's a meditation teaching. It shows that Buddhism is not a theoretical religion. It's not a theoretical path where we have to study and we have to master all sorts of doctrines. When it boils right down to it, it's living in the moment, living in the here and now, living in this moment which most of us think we're already living in. And I've always talked about this, how we think we're in the present moment, we think we're here and now, we think we're ever present. And as a result, we think of that as a very mundane sort of accomplishment. We think, so big deal, you're here, you're now, I'm here, I'm now. I'm stuck here, I'm stuck now. And so really often our paths and our goals are all to be free from the present moment. And we can see how our activities are all based on going after things that haven't come yet, or worrying or fretting, or dwelling on things that have happened in the past. And this should be immediately obvious to the average person, that much of our life is living in the past or living in the future. And when disaster strikes, when we meet with some sort of calamity or misfortune, it can get to the point where we're never here, we're never now. When we're driving, when we're walking, when we're cleaning, doing daily chores, we're never here and we're never now. We're never with the moment. Right now, when we're sitting here looking at the computer screen and watching me talk, you can ask yourself, are you really listening to me talk, or are you doing a thousand things at once? Are you also checking your IMs and looking at other websites and downloading this or downloading that? Or are you really here and present? Do you know that you're sitting in the chair? Are you aware that you're sitting right now? Are you aware of the feelings that are arising in the body? Are you aware of the emotions that are arising in the mind? Because what happens is, when these things come up, they drag us into the past and they drag us into the future, and they drag us into concepts. They drag us into imagination. We suddenly start running away. They run away with us. Where we'll be sitting here, we'll be listening to, you may be listening to what I say, but then suddenly it hits you in a certain way, you like it or you don't like it, and suddenly you're off. You're thinking about something, you're thinking about how it reminds you of this or reminds you of that, or maybe I start to get boring and you start to wander off and think of something totally unrelated. Maybe someone walks into the room and diverts your attention, or so on. So the teaching of the Buddha is to be present, is to know what's going on, is to be aware of what's going on. And that's really the essence of the meditation that we practice. When we start simply watching the breath, why are we watching the breath? We're learning what it means to live in the present moment. We're training our minds to be here and be now. So when we sit, we close our eyes and we just watch the stomach. And why this is so relieving and so enlightening is because that's present. That's being. That is the experience of reality, the experience of here and now that we think we're engaging in all the time. And we can see what the difference is. If anyone thinks that they're always present, that they're always here, and you've never meditated before, you can just try that for yourself. When the breath rises, just know that it's rising. You say to yourself, rising, falling. What that means when you say rising, when you say falling, is you are not letting this lead you onto something else. You're not taking it to the next step where this is this and this is that and judging and making more out of it than it actually is. Instead of when the belly rises and you think, oh, this or that, it suddenly leads to some other consequence. The thought that arises in our mind is rising. Just that's what it is. And this is what it means, tathā vipassati, to see it with insight. And that really is the essence of the meditation. When you close your eyes and you watch the rising and the falling, or when you watch a sensation that arises, when you have pain and instead of pain equals bad, equals a reason that I have to get up and move or so on, it's just pain. And so we just say to ourselves, pain, pain. Pain, just knowing it for what it is. And you can feel immediately the difference. You should be able to, at least on a very limited scale, realize this. It's very difficult to do on a large scale and to do it intensively. You know, when you get into a meditation course, it can be quite difficult. But even just as an experiment here, you should be able to see the benefits and that actually it really does bring benefits to you right away as you sit and watch the stomach. Rising, falling, or pain, or if you feel happy, 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 if you feel calm, calm. When you're thinking, 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 when you have emotions, liking or disliking, anger or frustration or depression. I've been trying to get in touch with the depression groups here in Second Life, but it doesn't seem to be that active. I think that'd be something to really get involved in is these groups of people who are depression support groups or people who suffer from depression, because it seems to be quite widespread and I guess rightly so, because there are a lot of challenges and difficulties that people are facing these days. But they don't have to be a cause for us to become depressed. And this is really a part of the meditation as well, that the reality of the situation that we're in, whatever that situation may be, is in the end only present states. It's only what's here and now. So consider for a moment, you're sitting here today, on this day, at this moment, here we are sitting, we have certain sights, you're seeing the computer screen, maybe you're seeing the rest of the room, you have sounds, you have the sound of my voice, the sound of the birds, the sound is in the room around you. You probably don't have many tastes or smells unless you're eating or drinking something. You have feelings sitting on the chair. It's hot, it's cool, it's hard, it's soft. And you have thoughts. You're thinking this or thinking that. And this is reality. But then ask yourself, how much more is there to our experience? How much of our experience is in that reality, and how much of it is yesterday, or the day before, or last year, or tomorrow, or the next day? Or what if fantasies and plans and worries and stresses that have nothing to do with this present reality? Most of the time we live our lives like that, and that's what gets us upset. That's what gets us stressed and depressed and leads to the majority of our suffering. So the meditation practice is to come back to this state of reality. And yes, we might be dealing with a great amount of difficulty in our lives, but we can minimize the impact that it has on our minds, allowing us to deal with it rationally and reasonably and fruitfully, so that we're able to make the most of it. We can do this by staying away from these states of depression and stress, rather than letting thoughts and ideas become negative and become upsetting to us. We simply focus on them. Instead of getting angry about things, see them for what they are. Just see them as they are. When you think of something, thinking. When you get angry, or depressed. And not letting it escalate or build into something more and make you do drastic things or say drastic things. So let's see, how is it that the Buddha describes all of this? If we look in the sutta, what is the idea of reviving the past? Well, in Buddhism, we separate experience, as I said, into six parts. One way of separating things out is into the six senses. All of our experience can be condensed down into six things, that is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, and thinking. Another way of condensing them is to talk about what happens when you see and what happens when you hear and so on. What happens when you see, there's the contact between the body and the mind. The body is the light and the eye, and the mind is that which is aware of it, is the consciousness. When these three things connect, then there is seeing. But all in all, we say that there are five things. There's four parts to the mind and one part of the body, and you have to get used to this when you read the text, because it's going to break it up into five parts. So material form, that's easy, that's the light and the eye, or the ear and the sound, or the nose and the smell, or the tongue and the taste, the feeling in the body, or any of these. As for the mind, those are both mental. But for the five physical senses, then we have, okay, this is the material. And this is really all we have. When you think of all of the many things that exist in the world, really, it all boils down to, the physical world boils down to these five things, if we look at the universe in terms of experience. The second one is feelings. And feelings are those simple sensations that arise, a painful sensation, a pleasant sensation, or a neutral sensation. And this is really where the difficulty arises, because when a pleasurable sensation arises, we begin to like something. This is where all of our addiction comes from, why we become attached to things, why we become addicted, why we find it very, very difficult to control our minds, to keep ourselves from chasing after things. It's because of these feelings that arise. When you see something, there's a pleasurable feeling. When it's a beautiful thing, you enjoy it. When you feel it, when you see, hear, smell, taste, feel, or think something bad, there arises a negative feeling. Maybe you get a headache, or maybe you tense up, or maybe you feel uncomfortable. You know, when the body is in an awkward position or in the same position for too long, there arises negative feelings. And as I've said, it doesn't have to be this way. This is really, many teachers will say, this is the key of the meditation practice. If you can catch the feelings, then it won't give rise to liking or disliking. It won't give rise to addiction or attachment. It won't give rise to stress and suffering. So if you simply, when you feel pain, you can say to yourself, pain. If you feel happy. You can keep your mind simply being happy. And people often think, well, in Buddhism we talk about not being attached to good things. Well, does that mean we can't be happy? And I think this is key. It's key to realize that you can have happiness. You can sit and be happy. You can even have great states of bodily or mental pleasure. There's nothing wrong with the pleasurable feeling. But by the same token, there's nothing wrong with the displeasurable feeling. The problem is our attachment to them, our compartmentalization of reality. So we see certain things as good and certain things as bad. When a certain feeling comes up, we like it. If we were just able to see happy feelings as happy, and this is a very important part of the meditation, When we sit and we see the happy feeling as happiness, simply as happiness, not liking it, not being attached to it. Or when we see the negative feeling as simply pain, not as a bad thing, not being attached to it, not being not being against it, not being upset by it. This is the core of the meditation practice, and this is true freedom. Because in this way you don't give rise to things that are going to cause you to commit bad karma, we say, or to do things that are going to hurt other people, and do things that are going to hurt yourself. You don't give rise to anger, you don't give rise to greed. The other ones are perception. Perception here, the translation of that they give is perception, and it's not how I've always understood perception, but it's an odd word. A clearer word would be memory, easier to understand. So memory here is that which works with experience to bring about the happy or the unhappy feeling. Why you like something, it isn't always because it brings a pleasurable feeling. Like when you see something, there's nothing intrinsic generally about the object that says, oh, that's beautiful, or oh, that's ugly, or oh, that's delicious. When you see a plate of food, if you've never tasted it before, you don't know that it's delicious. If you've never if you've never actually tried the dish and you've never experienced the pleasurable taste, then simply seeing it is not going to give rise to a happy feeling. It's not going to give rise to liking. But because of our memory, and this is how it works, they say, oh, from lifetime to lifetime. Scientists have a lot of fun trying to explain this, and I assume they have their own explanations in terms of genes, but why is it that we're attracted to each other? Why is it that when we look at children, we find them beautiful? Why is it that when we look at when men look at women and women look at men, or when you look at other people, you find them beautiful? Why is it that when we look at a dog, we don't find it beautiful, and so on? Now, genetics should be able to explain this sort of thing, but a more broad-based sort of explanation, and obviously more Buddhist-based sort of explanation, is talking about the long-term life-to-life carryover. And that's that we've built up our memories and our ideas of what is beautiful and what is ugly. And often this can become confused. So you see how people are born as men and then become attracted to men. People are born as women and become attracted to women. And some people are attracted to both men and women. And you can see how it varies in this way. Genetics could explain it, but the Buddhist explanation is quite simple in terms of developing memories. And you can see that even in this life. Often people will grow up and attain puberty and maybe never really be interested in the opposite sex or interested in sexual activity until they are given some sort of stimulus and are engaged in this sort of activity. The same can be said with drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes. It gives rise to these physical sensations that make you want it again and again. Why people smoke cigarettes? There's nothing about seeing a pack of cigarettes that is pleasurable. But the memory that this cigarette is going to give me that nicotine burst is what gives rise to the difficulty. So we have to understand this as well and really understand that it's not an easy thing to change the mind. It's not an easy thing to become free from this cycle of addiction. You know, if it were easy, then addiction would not be such a rampant problem that it is. Addiction is something that takes a long time to overcome for this reason, that we have this incredibly vast store of memory that we build up not only in this life but in past lives as well. But even just talking about in this life, the addiction that we have built up to the various stimuli around us, it's something that takes a long time, and for those people who are meditating, it can often be discouraging to see that again and again the mind goes back to these phenomena, but back and back to these defilements. But you know, just keeping in mind that we're dealing with a vast store of memories, and we're trying to create new memories. We're trying to remind ourselves that the pleasurable feeling is just a pleasurable feeling, and the sight is just a sight. And this is why we use this word. This is why when we say to ourselves, seeing, seeing, when we hear, hearing, hearing. It's to create a new memory, where instead of we see something, we say, oh, that's nice, or that's beautiful, or that's attractive. We say, that's seeing. That is what it is. It seems very boring, and it seems quite dry, but that's why I said Buddhism is not a theoretical practice. It's something that you have to practice hands-on. And when you do, you'll see that it's actually quite a wonderful thing. It's something that does bring enlightenment in terms of lightening the mind and removing our burdens. The fourth thing that one either dwells upon or does not dwell upon is we call formations. Formations is a very literal translation. The word here is sankhara, which in this case I would say means thoughts. In a specific sense, what you think of something, your judgment of something, when you the formation or the formed judgment, what sort of judgment you form or opinion you form, the forming of opinions, that's the meaning here. So in this is where this is the problem, you know. Feelings and memory together give rise to judgments, give rise to our idea that this is good and this is bad. And that's, the this is good and this is bad, that is the considered to be the mental defilement in Buddhism. That is what causes the problem. Or that is the problem. At the moment where those have arisen, it's already too late. You're entering in the cycle of addiction again. The liking propels you on to clinging and propels you on to seeking after, and propels you on to suffering, propels you on to this state of getting sometimes and not getting other times, being satisfied sometimes and being unsatisfied other times, and in general never really being satisfied with what you have, always seeking out after more. It's the building up of greed and anger, of liking and disliking. The more you give rise to these things, the more reaffirmed they become in your minds. So This is the fourth thing. This is the fourth constituent of reality, and this is the one that we're trying to avoid. When it does arise, you can be mindful of it. It doesn't mean that you're a goner if you like something or you don't like something, or if you're sitting and you become attached to this or attached to that. But to look at our meditation practice, and when these things arise, to acknowledge them. When you like something, say liking, and try to minimize the cycle of greater and greater liking, greater and greater attachment, greater and greater addiction. The final one is consciousness, and that's the awareness. And the Buddha says not to become attached to these things. So he says, let a person not revive the past. So how do you revive the past or follow after the past? You think about these things in the past. You think about your addictions. You think about your experiences in the past. Sorry, not addictions. You think about the things you saw, the things you heard, the things you smelled and tasted and felt and thought. And you reminisce over them. You know, in everyday life, everyday language, it means you think back over fond memories. You think back over, oh, how it used to be. And we're so good at this. I think over my child and I think, oh, it was such a wonderful time, so innocent. And then I catch myself and I say, hey, wait a minute. And you think back, and you think, how did I feel at that time? You know, there was all those wonderful experiences and wonderful things and so carefree. But how did I feel at that time? And if you think back, you can realize that there's a lot of stress and suffering. There's a lot of difficulty as well. And then you can ask yourself whether reminiscing over this really makes you happy, whether it really brings you peace. And you can see that actually it disrupts the mind, it disturbs the mind. It keeps us from being here and now. Whenever we're in the past or in the future, we're no longer here. We're no longer with reality. And the future is the same. What the Buddha is doing here is he's not putting it in ordinary language. He's not saying, you know, what does it mean not to revive the past? It means memories that you have, you know, things that happened to you or so on. He's saying, break it down. You know, what's happening here? What's going on in this experience when you think about the past or when you think about the future? It's the five aggregates. That's all there is. Whatever you think about, say, a person, when a person dies and you think about them, oh, how wonderful it was to be with them and how sad it is that they're gone. What you're really thinking of, he says, is experience, is a group of phenomena that work together to create addiction, to create attachment, to create suffering. And or that work together to bring peace, happiness, wisdom, and freedom from suffering. And it's our choice. It depends how we're going to look at them, how we're going to approach them. And so this is, the Buddha said, how you have a good day. You avoid these, you avoid the thinking about the past and worrying about the future, and you focus on the aggregates that arise in the present moment. You focus on the constituents of reality, every little piece of reality that arises, that contributes to this cycle of addiction, of attachment, or that contributes to your peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering. And I think this is a very core teaching of the Buddha, and I think it's something that we should all remember as being a core to what the Buddha taught. This sutta, in fact, repeats itself several times in a row. So you see the number on the PDF file, 131. There's 152 of the suttas, but 131 is the first one in this series, and then it goes on, 132, 133, and they're all the same. It's just someone else, one of the Buddha's followers, repeating the sutta. And this has often been said to show that this teaching, especially, was a very important teaching, and rightfully so. I think we can all agree that this is a very clear way to practice, to see things that are here and now. When something comes, when something arises, know that it arises. When something ceases, know that it ceases. Train yourself to be here and now, to forget about the past and not worry about the future, in the sense of not dwelling on them. When a memory comes up, just know that you're remembering. Be aware that you're remembering. When you're thinking of something you have to do tomorrow, just know that you have to do it. Don't let it become an obsession where suddenly you're, if they do this, I'll do that, and when they say this, I'll say that, and then I'll do this and this and this, and making plans and castles, they say, building castles in the sky. So this is the teaching that I thought to give today, especially since I'm doing this piece for this documentary on life in a day. So this is how I would sum up life in a day, that you should live your life for the day or for the moment, for the here and now. You should not live your life thinking about worrying about the past, or thinking of, or dwelling on the past, or worrying about the future. So that's all I have to say for today. I hope that was enjoyable and at least somewhat enlightening for everybody, and that you were able to use it as a meditation object for your own practice. So thank you, and I'll take questions if anybody has them. Otherwise, thanks for coming.